Have you ever told a lie?
Definitely. I've definitely told a lie before. I don't know what made me want to tell it.
Yeah, just for fun and to maybe make people laugh.
I've told a lie. When I was playing, I told my sister to break my doll and I said that it fell on the floor because I didn't want my sister to get in trouble.
Once when I was like about 2 years old, I got into the flower and threw it all over the place. And then I said it was my dog.
I did tell a lie. All of the girls like in my old school, they were saying that they saw something. And then I didn't see it, so I just said I saw it too, but I didn't.
Yeah, I think everyone's told a lie once, and so have I. I broke glass, and I blamed it on someone else. But then I told the truth.
I have never told a lie in my life.
That's a lie.
Yeah, it is. Like, sometimes you have to lie. Like, there are some things that you feel better if you lie than if you tell the truth. Because sometimes you might come out better if you tell a lie than if you tell the truth. But it is important to tell the truth. But, I don't know, like, sometimes it might be possible to tell a lie. Like, it happens to everyone.
Welcome back to Ecolution. We're glad you're back, and that is 100% the truth. Now, we pride ourselves on talking to experts and young people who really know their stuff when it comes to the climate crisis. Sometimes face to face, but often it's online, and it has to be said that that's a whole different story. Like, in your normal life, how do you work out if someone's telling the truth?
My brother, when he lies, he would normally say it really, really quiet or really, really loud.
Like, sometimes you know they're like, those people are lying when they're like kind of struggling with what to say for their lie.
One, if what the expression they have on their face, if they look guilty or not.
There's this face that I can recognize when people lie. Like, they put a little smile on their face. I do that sometimes, and my dad recognizes it.
Another is if something makes sense, because you don't have to be smart to know that something should make sense or not. Like, it doesn't make sense if someone saw a chair floating in the air and nothing on it. That doesn't make sense, so we should be able to see that.
If the lie's like, it's like hard to believe, then it must be a lie.
Say if someone said, oh, I saw a monkey doing a breakdance, I wouldn't really believe it because it sounds a bit strange and silly.
It's not very common. So yeah, sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not.
I mean, I'd like to watch that. Who wouldn't want to see a monkey breakdance? But our brain trust, this time from Step Aside ETNS, hit some really strong points. When we're trying to work out if a statement is true or false, we use lots of different senses. It depends on who is saying it, their tone of voice, how they build their sentences, and then what kind of body language they use to help them explain. And for all of that, there's still a chance that there is more behind what people say than we can know. And when we see something online, even more of these signals are either missing or impossible to read. Today's episode is all about a subject that's popping up everywhere in the past few years: disinformation. You may have heard the term fake news or alternative facts. Well, those are phrases widely used since 2016, when Donald Trump began his first term. Disinformation is false information. Information that is not true, but that is being shared as if it's a fact. I mean, I guess that sounds similar to what we were discussing earlier, right? And these alternative facts are offered to intentionally mislead people, sometimes by people in positions of real power. So what can we do about it? Last week, we did an episode that went into the woods. This week, we're going to meet some people who help us tell the wood from the trees, or how to work out what is true and what is a lie. First up, the Voices International Festival of Journalism in Zagreb.
So I'm Silvia Cavasola, and I'm the project manager of A Fuoco, in English On Fire, which is a climate disinformation project financed by IMIF. In Italy, you know, many, especially young generations, are very interested in climate disinformation, climate change, etc. And we're for checking organizations, so that's our core business. And climate is one of the top three disinformation narratives we find ourselves to deal with every day. So we decided to launch a project that was specifically focused, primarily focused and only focused on climate disinformation. So we launched this newsletter back in 2023, thanks to funding from IMIF. And since then, we received so many subscriptions, like we didn't even expect, like it was so fast growing. And so we decided to grow the project into a multimedia project. So now we're running a climate disinformation newsletter, which is coming out weekly, which we do in collaboration with Italian climate experts, a podcast on Spotify and other platforms. Then we have created a mini video series on climate disinformation, which should help people and specialized audiences, especially young people, to deal with climate disinformation. And finally, we're running a series of workshops for Italian journalism students and professionals to deal specifically with climate disinformation, which is, as you know, can require some specific background, so that's why it's particularly difficult to fact check. It is all in Italian, so it's primarily for an Italian public, but given the success that this is reaching and the interest that we found among our audiences, we're hoping that we can transform this into something more international.
Media literacy is all about how we read texts, from TikTok to news articles, online and in newspapers, and how we learn to ask the right questions of ourselves when we see something that doesn't seem right. Because increasingly, we get most of our information about climate and news online, which Sylvia recognises too.
The youngest generation is even more vulnerable to misinformation because of their media consumption habits, which include sourcing information mainly from social media. So that's definitely the trick.
And when we were at the BT Young Scientist Awards earlier this year, one project backed this up.
My name's Daniel Smith and I'm from Sutton Park School. Our project's on the influence of social media on political engagement among Irish youth, how much social media impacts the current youth and how it will impact the future of politics. Well, it's quite clear and you probably expect that social media is used by nearly all teenagers more than once a day. It's really a core aspect of their life, and I conducted my own survey which kind of furthered this. Among 818 Irish students in secondary school, about 90% of them use it at least once a day. And they gain lots of information about politics in particular online because they're not as in tune with the 6 o'clock news or the 9 o'clock news. Everything is found by teenagers online nowadays. Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, it's all where all the information comes from. They get short snippets of information, they latch onto it. They're all on the dopamine, as you could expect. So they all just want short snippets of information. And I'd say the majority, I mean, if you compare it to the political world, about 36% of teenagers follow news in general on social media. So, of course, climate change being such a big phenomenon is going to be on the news as well. They're going to find out lots of information about it on the news sites like RTE's TikTok or Daily Mail's TikTok. Basically, all the information, I'd say, is taken from social media, really, nowadays.
Which makes it all the more important to tackle head-on.
I would definitely say that if we manage to get some media literacy, consciousness, to bring some of that consciousness to this generation, I think some of the problems will be dealt with.
Disinformation often comes about to steer people into believing something that is patently untrue. But what do you think motivates them?
They don't really want to get in trouble.
Like, they're trying to make themselves safe.
To blame trouble on someone else.
Online, I think people lie a lot because they can get away with it. Unlike speaking to someone in person, a post on social media can always be deleted, as if it never existed in the first place.
Maybe they're scared to tell the truth.
Maybe something will get taken away from them.
I think that people tell lies to get what respect and to get what they want.
I mean, that covers a whole lot. People make things up out of fear of being caught out, or they blame others so as to distract from their own actions and make other people the bad guys. And by doing so, they can achieve power and influence. People say no news is good news, but over the past year, it seems we've been bombarded with news that seems confusing, scary, hard to decipher, and yet impossible to ignore. Information that claims the climate crisis is a hoax, or that having a more sustainable place to live is a conspiracy built to control people. And lots of people want to listen, because the bigger and the louder the story, the more it spreads. Have you ever had someone you know share a meme with you that seemed unkind, or say something they heard online as if it was a fact and not an opinion. Sharing things is natural, but accidentally posting content that you think is real but is actually false is called misinformation. And it's everywhere. But why?
Well, I guess because this information is built to be viral. So if you don't know the tricks of this information, you're going to follow it, no matter what the consensus says or what the scientific papers say. And we also have to take that step and be more engaged in popularizing what the climate experts are saying. So we have to really foster this collaboration among media people or people who are working on social media and the experts who are talking about this, because not always it's so easy for normal people to take some time and read the climate consensus. So it's really important to make that step, to make that connection between media and people working on social media and the climate experts.
We try and make sense of things that can be confusing and contradictory on Ecolation. We are one small podcast, but there are lots of additional ways that we can turn the tide and detect the lies.
Hello, my name is Christian Spahr. I'm managing director of Lie Detectors, a media literacy organization that is active in several countries in Europe. Lie Detectors is an organization that works with a huge network of journalists. We have trained 500 journalists across Europe to do media literacy training in schools. And of these 500 journalists, currently we have 300 active journalists who go regularly in classrooms and help young people to teach fake from truth on the internet. And the idea of sending journalists into schools is that journalists can also talk about their profession. This means they can say, to do a news story, it's important to hear different sides, to check the facts, etc. So by having a journalist in a classroom, kids understand what is the difference between professional news production and what they randomly see on Instagram, on TikTok, etc. And they also more easily understand the difference between a fact and information and an opinion or activism. That is quite important, and that's very successful. It has been founded 7 years ago by Juliane von Reppert-Bismarck, and step by step we have rolled out this training in both public and private schools across Europe. And we are still on a course of expansion. This means we want to work more and more with schools in different countries. So now the idea is also to go especially in countries where societies are maybe a bit more polarized than elsewhere, and to make young people fit for participating in debates, understanding what news and communication mean for democracy. That's quite important.
That discussion is one that's definitely underway in our brain trust. We asked them if they trust what they see online.
I don't trust the internet.
No, really. Well, it depends. If they say, like, in Egypt there are pyramids, that's like, you can believe it. But if they say monkeys wear tutus, then that's probably a lie.
I think especially online, facts and opinion get blurred a lot. And it'd be sometimes difficult to distinguish whether the news you're reading is factual or opinion-based.
I know I can trust some things, like donuts are good, but some stuff like that just look crazy, that are like it's really crazy to happen, I don't believe them all of the time.
10% of the time. It's actually very little what you see on the internet is entirely true. Even if it's partly true, there's a very low chance that all of the things that a person is saying is true. There's also that if a lot of people are reacting to it and loads of people are looking at it, it's also a sign that it could be fake, because fake news spreads quicker.
It really does. Most of the kids we spoke to for this episode were in third class, so age 9 or 10. And that's a perfect age to start thinking about this stuff.
We focus on the age group of 10 to 15 years. And that's an age, obviously, where more and more young people already have their own smartphone, where they are more and more exposed to different kinds of content on the internet. And maybe also an age where both teachers and parents think, oh, the kids already know everything about the internet, you know? So this is why we focus on that age group.
It's easy to fall into that, all right, thinking you're too smart to be fooled. But there are plenty of people who can't tell what's a fact and what's an opinion. A fact is backed up by research and science. An opinion is nothing but a feeling people have about a subject and can be informed by other people or by only finding a news online. And when big companies like Meta or X are removing the people they once employed to check facts, that online space becomes a place where disinformation grows. The rise of deepfake videos and AI-generated images that seem totally real has made the line between fact and fiction even more blurry. And children and adults alike can be caught out.
It's important to run surveys to have data on how young people consume news. That's also part of our work that we ask the young people, how do you consume news, what channels do you use, etc. And we compare the news consumption of the pupils with the news consumption of the teachers, for instance, because they also need a common basis about what to talk. And we see, for instance, that video-based platforms on the internet, video-based social media channels, the young people are much more using these than the teachers would do, you know. Certain platforms like TikTok, but also when I think about Discord, etc., you know, there are certain platforms that are much more used by the young people and almost not used by the teachers. And on the other hand, the teachers would still be more on Facebook, or they would maybe use a bit more security-oriented messengers like Signal, for instance, you know. So there are quite huge discrepancies or differences between the teachers and the students. So that's why we also invest in teacher training. Like, we're an NGO, a civil society organization funded by philanthropy. But we do think that in the long run, the public sector needs to do more in that regard, you know. In certain countries and regions of Europe, media literacy is already part of the curriculum, but it's not like everywhere kids would be naturally trained by their teachers in school on media literacy. And that's something we want to change, and we also want more support by the governments at national, regional and local level.
We all need to be as well educated as we can about the disinformation out there. And Sylvia of On Fire had a quiz to see just how well I would do in distinguishing the truth from fiction.
So it's 9 questions. I hope they're in good English. They should be. And some of them are kind of tricky, but please have your try.
Okay, so the first question is, what percentage of climate scientists agree that human activity is the main driver of climate change? Around 70%, around 97%, and there is no clear consensus. I'm going to say around 97%. Yay! The second question is, cold weather proves global warming is a hoax. What logical fallacy does this statement use? False equivalence, appeal to authority, and confusing weather with climate. I'm going to say confusing weather with climate. Okay. Clearly I'm an expert. What is the fake expert strategy in climate misinformation? Presenting people with no climate science background as credible experts, discrediting climate misinformation with scientific evidence, and using AI to generate misleading scientific papers. I'm going to say the first one.
Not many people have got so many correct answers, I must say.
Okay, which of these is not a form of climate misinformation? Denying that climate change is happening, exaggerating the speed of climate change to create fear, and calling for urgent policy action based on the latest IPCC reports. So I'm going to say the last one. Question 5 is, volcanoes emit more CO2 than all human activity combined. Is it true?
That's getting pretty big in social media in Italy. I don't know if you've heard of it, but I think you don't have any volcanoes, so, and we do, so that's why it's getting pretty big. But you can still guess the right answer.
I'm going to say the last one, which is no human activity emits over 100 times more CO2 than volcanoes.
Good job again. 5 out of 5.
Why do fossil fuel companies fund climate misinformation? To support scientific research on climate change, to protect their business interests and delay climate policies, or to help governments transition to renewable energy? I'm going to say the second one.
It's pretty straightforward.
Which of the following is a red flag for climate misinformation? Claims that renewables will completely replace fossil fuels overnight, articles that cite multiple peer-reviewed climate studies, and arguments that downplay the urgency of climate action using vague language. The middle one. Did I break my streak? Okay. What is doomism in the context of climate misinformation? The belief that individual action is enough to stop climate change, the false idea that climate change is already unstoppable, so action is pointless, or a movement to promote solutions to climate change. The false idea that climate change is already unstoppable. Yeah.
Good job. Last question.
How can you protect yourself from climate misinformation? Trust only sources that confirm your existing beliefs, fact check claims using reputable sources, or avoid reading about climate change to reduce confusion. The second one.
Yay. Very good job. So
one wrong.
You're on fire. Keep spreading accurate climate knowledge. And that's our project at Fuoco.
I think 8 out of 9 isn't bad at all. How did you do? Thanks to Sylvia from On Fire and Christian from Lie Detectors for speaking to us for today's show and for the work they are doing in fighting disinformation online. We can't solve the problem in one episode of Ecolution, but we can help push the debate along.
I do think that it's very important to have young people talking in school classes, in media literacy trainings, not just to teach them, but to hear from them how they are consuming news, how they are talking maybe with their friends or with their parents about what they see on the news or in different social media platforms. And then to realize that there is actually not only one opinion or not only one person can be right. There is probably a set of facts that is a set of facts, you know. You cannot debate whether the facts are true or false because the facts are the facts. But you can have many different opinions and ways of looking at an issue. And to understand that better and to understand that dialogue in a society is only possible if we actually distinguish the facts from the opinions. I think that's very important to get this kind of atmosphere in a classroom or in a group of young people that actually not only one person is right and the other is wrong. That's also part of the effect of this media literacy training.
Thanks also to our brain trust from third class at Stepaside ETNS. They have been lucky enough to talk about disinformation, greenwashing, and the lies we see and hear played out across the World Wide Web. They discuss it at home and in their classroom. And it would seem they aren't backward in sharing their opinions either.
Politicians lie a lot because they want to, like, win, so they kind of lie a lot.
I think they lie a lot because they want to discover something new, and then if they lie, then people might believe it, and then they might think that it's a new discovery.
But when somebody discovers it, they don't, like, shout it out to the whole world. But the people who know about that, they shout it out to the whole world. So then everyone thinks they had it. Also about Donald Trump, he also wants to encourage oil companies, but I don't think that's right. It's not that great for the environment. And if this keeps up, like, the pollution and everything, I don't think our world would be that nice.
Ecolution is produced by Nikki Coughlin and presented by me, Evie Kenny. Now, head over to our RT Kids YouTube channel to see what our panel thinks in our video spin-off.
This is an
RT Junior podcast!
For more, search RTE Kids Podcast.